And welcome, paid subscribers, our patrons, our subs. What are Patreon supporters or patrons? What are Substack supporters?
Substack. They're stackers. Stackers. Yeah. Hey, stackers. Okay. What's up?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We love you. Thank you.
We do. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Continuing our conversation with Anthony Metivier. Look, I just did it. I stumbled over it. I thought about it too much.
More than
the problem. Yeah. That was a great conversation. I really enjoyed that. You know, sometimes we do those, we try to keep those dark rooms to an hour, and sometimes you're like, oh, we could do another hour. But it's good to give some boundaries, but I really enjoyed that conversation, Anthony. As we said in the free part of the show, Anthony is going to help us share with us some of this magnetic memory method, help us learn something. Because I need this, because my memory is, let's charitably call it, untrained. There are much worse adjectives I could apply to it, but especially if you ask my wife, I apparently don't remember anything. So
Brad's memory is scattered across various dive bars. Parts of the Peruvian jungle. What do they call it? The Rainbow Bridge.
Right. I smeared my consciousness across the universe. It's hard to pull it all, reel it all back in. Sometimes.
What I'm trying to tell you is, if a didgeridoo was a podcaster, that's Brad Kelly.
That's right. That's about right. Yeah. So help me.
Sorry, here where I live, that's just it hits with a special resonance, because didgeridoos all over the place.
I think I'm gonna do a special outro for this episode just for you, Brad. Gonna be a didgeridoo is gonna be the outro. So now you definitely gotta listen all the way to the very end.
Yeah, that's right. I love it. Yeah. So memory methods. Yeah, go for it. Let's get into it.
Your memory is not trained.
Okay.
What would you like it to be trained to do?
Learning. I guess I just would like to. It's literally for everyday things. It's for very basic. Being able to memorize a list of things would be good, I suppose, and I could find a use for that. But it's remembering what happened. This is going to sound bad. Remembering what happened like a week or two ago. Remembering conversations I had with people. I mean, we've got hours of content we've done in Art of Darkness. I'll go back and listen to an episode sometimes as like prep for a dark room or something. And I'll be like, oh yeah, it'll be like, I'm hearing it for the first time.
Right.
Yeah. So that kind of thing, just, I guess, experiential memory.
So the first thing I would point out, and I always love to ask this, because often people say, well, I guess I could use the ability to memorize a list. Mm-hmm. And then they describe all of these things that are, in effect, a list. Right?
Okay, great.
So
okay.
What you did last Thursday at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. is item one on the list, or it is, so a lot of people, they put themselves in the wrong position relative to the horse, because they're thinking that it's different than it is. But the nature of information is that it will always come out of you from beginning to end. And whenever you're contending with it, you will contend with it at some sort of beginning. So what we want is a kind of transcendence of linear order. But we need to use linear order in order to do it. So, for example, I learn languages using these techniques. And essentially what I do is I memorize lists. So any vocabulary list is literally a list, but every sentence is a list of the words in the sentence.
Well, that's true.
But to get to the morphological stage where you're essentially using grammar, well, then that's kind of like a different thing. That's reading, writing, speaking, listening frequently enough to get those engines able to do the combinatorial stuff. So in terms of what you mean by like everyday things, what you've listed is essentially an ability to time machine back to previous events. Yeah. And that, I would say, is memorize a list. So
okay.
In order to do that, the list needs to be captured. And then you need what I would call five systems. You would want a memory palace system. You would want an alphabet system, a number system, a symbol system. Symbol system will probably be used the least of all, but, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. And then the fifth system is some sort of review system. And that's where we return back to the memory palace system, because the memory palace system is the review system.
Okay.
So I've done a lot of work on what I sometimes call a magnetic calendar or mnemonic calendar. And it's really fun to be able to say, no, you said that on Friday, the 11th of April at 2 p.m. And the way that you do that is you have these systems that I just talked about. So one of the things that is just astonishing once you've done it is if you have an image for every number from 00 to 99, you'll instantly always have an image for 2. When I memorize times, I use the 24-hour clock, so 1400 hours, right? Okay. My image for let's use 1600 hours, because I think you'll guys get a kick out of this. Okay. My image for 16 is Dashiell Hammett.
Okay.
Now, the reason why it's Dashiell Hammett is because there's another system I use. Like I told you, this is a rabbit hole, but every time that I think of one is either a T or D, and six. Okay. Is a sh, j, ch sound, right? So okay. 16 makes the word dish, but dish is not very memorable. So right. If I have Dashiell Hammett throwing dishes, then we've got some magic, right?
Okay,
so it's really easy to remember that. Now, let's say we're talking about the 25th of October. Well, 25, 2 is N, 5 is L, right? So I make the word nail. Nail is a little bit more memorable when it's going into Pinhead's head in Hellraiser.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So now every 25 is, or I'll use sometimes Niall Ferguson, right? Okay. I'll switch, or sometimes I'll have him pounding nails into his head. But the thing is that you want images for things.
Okay.
And then, oh yeah, last week it was the 17th and there's Nick Nolte, because 2 is N and 7 is a K. Would it be useful to like just modulate that whole system a little
bit? Sure. Yeah.
That's called the major method or major system. It goes back to what's called the Kattapayattu, which is the earliest evidence that I've seen is around 800 BCE, I think. Kattapayattu is, and this is, by the way, is much more common in the ancient languages. So Hebrew has this as well. It's called the Gematria. Mm-hmm. Every letter is linked to a number. And every letter is also linked to an object. So like if you look at Aleph in Hebrew, it's actually an ox's head upside down, right?
Right.
And
right.
Ox is the animal and the number is 1, right? Mm. So there's a very famous story where a student of the Tanakh or something like this comes to the rabbi and he says, "How are you memorizing all this stuff?" And the rabbi says, "Son, you must become a serious student of the alphabet, because you need to have number, image, and a letter for everything." So one in the major system, this is really codified in the way that we still use it today. That's in a lot of the popular books about memory techniques by a guy named Amy Perry. I think in the late 19th century, 1800 sometime. Anyway, should memorize it. It'd be better proof of concept if I could say, well, Amy Perry, it was definitely 1897. But at the end of the day, what it is one is a T, zero is soft C, S or Z, one is T and D, 2 is N, 3 is M, 4 is R, 5 is L, 6 is Ch, Sh, J, 7 is a K or a hard G. I only use 7 myself. Some people use a Y for 7. 8 is an F or V, 9 is a B or P. And then if I do my little teaching thing, 8, I just said, is F or V, right? 6 is a sh sound. So fish.
So,
and then 49. Oh, I like 49 because 4 is R, 9 is a B or P. So I use rap, but to make it more specific, like fish, I use a very specific fish. I won't get into because you won't unless you've been to Camillus, British Columbia. very specific fish. But this is a little more obvious. So rap, I think of NWA, identity okay. by itself creates right. violence or causes violence, sorry. Yeah. So 84, now we have F and R. So fire, missing in action part two, Chuck Norris with that flamethrower.
Okay.
Anyway, I can go on and on and on. Pac-Man, yeah. 9 is P, 7 is K. And so once you develop that for yourself, now you have an image for every day on the calendar and you have an image mm-hmm. for every hour of whatever happened on that day.
Right. Now here's, I guess, the question. I can understand getting that system nailed down, right? And I read tarot, so I've sort of stumbled into a couple of these, I think, sort of ways of categorizing stuff. But are you then, as you go through a day, are you actively sort of logging this stuff? Like, if that's even a sensible way to talk about it, I mean, you've been cognitively operating so long this way that it sort of logs itself?
You can build procedural memory where you are inclined to do it automatically,
mm-hmm.
but you really want to do it, I would suggest, very selectively. So okay. one thing that I do is I keep what's called a descriptive snapshot journal. Okay. So I'm really just writing down the times and the things that I want to memorize. And then so it's like a weeding process, a culling process. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, 7 a.m. Art of Darkness pod, and if I want to make note of that, and memorize that it was specifically at 7 a.m., then later at the end of the day, I'll place that stuff in a memory palace.
I see. Okay.
So the events of the day. But I, if somebody says, hey, can you meet me wherever at whatever time, I'll just, look at the watch and make a little image and so forth relative to what time it is now and so forth. But I still write stuff down, right? Because I don't want to. Because I have many other things to memorize other than just
right. Yeah, you still are going to rely
in my
on,
practice.
Right, you're going to rely on the tools that are. It's you keep a calendar, right? And you.
But I worked out this magnetic calendar because so many people ask me, like, how do I remember more of my life? And then I thought about, well, how would I? And I do use it selectively though, like for birthdays and upcoming things. But that's how I would do it. I would memorize what I had written down using a descriptive to-do list, basically.
Okay.
So rather than having a proscriptive to-do list that tells me what to do and when to do it, I would just write down what I did and when I do it. And I do that. I did that for years to train myself to stop wasting time.
Right. Well, who doesn't need to stop wasting a little bit of time, right? I mean, geez, fascinating. Well, yeah. All right. So I'm going to listen back to this. Because I'm going to forget it as soon as we hit record, because I haven't put any of this into practice, or as soon as we hit stop, because I haven't put any of it into practice. But
it's in Victorious Mind, and there's a version of it in Flyboy. So
yeah, yes, okay. No, we're gonna do that. All right.
Well, listen, and obviously, if you can't get enough of Anthony here, he has his website. What's the website, Anthony, for people who don't know?
MagneticMemoryMethod.com. I think if you just put Anthony in memory. I mean, I tried to make the title Magnetic Memory Method memorable, but some people aren't there yet. So just, right. I think Anthony in memory, maybe think Anthony Burgess, which is maybe my ego talking here.
I like it. Yeah.
Some way of remembering Anthony in memory. I'm sure I'll come up in Google if Google's even going to be a thing.
Yes, you definitely will. Yeah, agreed.
Well, Anthony's my middle name and it's my son's name and was my father's name and my grandfather's name. And what's your name again?
But this is how memory works, right? Mm-hmm. So the other system is you have the same thing for every letter of the alphabet. Now, technically you do have many of the alphabet already covered if you have your number system, because, if you know that F or V is 8, right? Now you have your images for 8 or 0, 8 or however you construct your system. Then, when you look at these letters, you already have images for F and B.
Right.
But I suggest having separate systems just to keep things, because it's wild enough as it is, just to keep things clear. So
makes sense. Yeah.
A simple exercise is get out a piece of pen and paper, write down A to Z, or if you, you know, do Cyrillic, then, you know, more, right. Or if it's Italian, less. And, but I would just go with the English alphabet. Why not? And then go A, who am I going to put? Adam West. He played Batman. Damn, I got B already. And I'll put in Christian Bale because he played Batman too. C, Cookie Monster. D, Dracula. E, Einstein, blah, blah, blah. You get to Billy Zane with Z. You know, you might get stuck on X. This is where Google is your friend. Xerxes, Xenophon, Xantippia, you know, like on and on and on.
Yeah,
Professor X from X-Men, Malcolm X. So, you know, sometimes you got to fudge things a little bit. Maybe you just think of a movie theater where
But I almost feel like if you fudge it, that's going to make it more memorable. In a way, I don't know. I'm not sure, but
it's an art. It's like called the art of memory for a reason. You know, it's not it's not perfect world,
and
you do have to be sort of selective of what you memorize because there's only so much time in the day. But if you can get that together, if you can get your memory systems together, and then you build memory palaces, and then you are hyper selective, then you can almost have that Spinoza effect that we were talking about earlier, where you're a meat tube through which information passes and sediment collects, but then you just get more of that sediment. So you have greater pattern recognition. And then the pattern recognition itself is memorable. So you're actually using memory techniques a little less and less as you go, and you're preserving them more and more for the really challenging stuff.
Interesting. Yeah.
At least that's my philosophy theory of it.
No, this is fascinating stuff. I'm gonna, I don't know anything else to say about it, but
I could see this. I could see this having all kinds of applications, and also just being good for your spirit. I mean, I think you were talking about this, about how there's like a therapeutic or a healing quality to it. It's very interesting. I spent a lot of years trying to forget, though, so maybe I should.
We can do that too.
Yeah,
better said. I think developing comfort with unwanted thoughts is the better strategy.
That makes sense. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, Anthony, you got to pay more for me to teach you how to forget stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've never found my inner charlatan.
Yeah. Right.
Well, hang around us long enough and you're going to be all right. On that note, I've got the business about Tool and Bill Hicks.
Yeah, let's talk about Tool and Bill Hicks a little bit.
My favorite band, Tool. Although right now, I mean, Tool's always going to be my favorite band, but right now I'm so into Ulver right now. I can't even tell you. Their live album, Grieg Hallen, where they're doing a bunch of live stuff from the assassination of Julius Caesar. Friggin' incredible. There's no band like Ulver. Like, if you look at their whole discography, it's insane. They started as like a folk metal band. And I mean, they've had like every album's new. Anyway, okay. This is from The Pit, and it's called The Strange Bromance Between Tool and Bill Hicks. I'm just going to read a few paragraphs here. In the years since his untimely passing. Okay. Although he started slugging it out on the club circuit in his mid-teens, Bill Hicks only enjoyed moderate success until his later years. He succumbed to pancreatic cancer at the age of 32. We know that. As Hicks began to ascend the comedic ladder in the early 1990s, a band with an overlapping worldview to his own were developing at a similar pace. Intrepid sonic explorers of the mind and soul, Tool, saw like-minded peer in Hicks and sought to cultivate a deeper relationship with the comic. Having developed a friendship during Lollapalooza in 1993, dude, take me back to Lollapalooza in 1993.
Awesome.
Take me back.
Yeah.
Tool and Hicks endeavored to bridge the cultural gap between their respective mediums by setting up a tour. Frontman Maynard James Keenan, the great Maynard James Keenan, spoke about the subject in an interview with Marc Maron, saying, "We were going to put together a tour. It was still when the band was young and still kind of up and coming, way before Anima. We were still at that level where we could probably pull something like that off. We were trying to figure out what we were going to do. We were trying to figure out how we would work it into where it would somehow be accepted in that forum. Even then, it was hard for us to be accepted. We would play somewhere and we'd have these moshing skinhead dudes saying, 'Play faster.' And we'd be like, 'Listen slower.' I don't know. This is what we're doing. You came here to see us. I'm not sure why I'm supposed to give you what you want. Bill and I discussed this. It was early enough on in our career that we think we could at least weed out the people that didn't want to see that somehow resonate on that level. Although any hope for a theoretical tour died with Hicks, the comedian's indelible mark can be found all over Anima. The hauntingly menacing Learn to Swim chant from the title track comes from an idea explored in Hicks's Arizona Bay, in which he contemplates LA falling into the Pacific Ocean. All right, there you go. And we all know Bill Hicks and Anima, one of the greatest albums ever made, and certainly one of the greatest albums of the 90s. Yeah, 80 minutes, and then at the end, man, you know, there you got those weird swooshing sounds, and then he comes in and he's talking about drugs. And
it seems to me that like Hooker with a Penis is total Hicks channeled, you know, against Debbie Gibson or whoever.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. They do that live pretty much every show.
I don't remember the exact way that it played out, because I don't know if it was like a day after or 2 days after or 3 days after. Maybe it was a week after. But 9/11 happened, and I had tickets for Tool in the Sky Dome in Toronto underneath the CN Tower.
Right.
Like Maynard couldn't stop talking about it. He's like, look at that big giant penis up here. Do you think they're going to fly something? And like the whole audience was just freaked out. Like I'd never heard so little applause in my life, so little sound from an audience ever. And I couldn't really tell if Maynard was just as nervous as we were and he was like playing up on it, or he too was like genuinely nervous. Yeah. But it was the weirdest concert I've ever been to.
That's interesting. That makes me think of I saw somebody tweet today or yesterday, a guy, Duncan Rayburn, great writer, he tweeted, "America's greatest export is paranoia." It just made me think of that.
I tweeted that ages ago. Seriously, no, really. Yeah. That's something I've been saying for a long time.
Yeah. So Maynard goes up there, and instead of like making everybody feel better, he's like, what if they hit this building? You know, what if they take this thing down? We're really good at that.
I've had a blast. Anthony, thank you so much. This is really a great time. Come back anytime. You want to talk about Borges, you know, later this year, next year, you know, open door. I really enjoyed this. Like I love having all our guests, but I just, the depth that you went to, went so hard. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think Borges and Dick, those are some heavy duty memory guys.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I'd love to talk some Borges. So maybe we'll talk back, Chan. We'll get that on the calendar for maybe later this year. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Perfect. Cool.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. I'll see y'all. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Uh-oh.